February 13th, 2003. We are going to get Gerda Broughton's life story today.
Okay, Gerda, I would like, first of all, your birth, when and where, and your parents, and your maiden name, and we'll start off with that.
All right. I was born on January 27th, 1919, in Worcester, Massachusetts. My maiden name is Cornell. My father's name was Linwood Brownell Cornell. And he had been a native of New England. He had ventured out into the Wild West and met my mother, and they'd gotten married. Her name was Eleanor Menifee. And so they got married, then she became Eleanor Cornell, and they had a baby in Portland. That's my older sister. But he decided he could probably make more money if he went east, so we went east, and I was born in Worcester. And it was a bad winter. Only the streetcar tracks were cleared. So he had to drive along the streetcar tracks in order to get to the hospital. And I was born with yellow jaundice, which was cuts on my neck, you know. So when my mother saw me, I was covered with blood and had yellow skin.
Oh, my.
So she kind of wanted to reject me, but she couldn't. So there we were. By the time I was 2 years old, we were back in Portland. And so I was basically raised in Portland. My sister and I were the only children until about 10 years later, a couple of boys came along.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. In those days, you were not real sure, you know, about anything. And so she, in fact, had been told she wouldn't have any more children. So these two boys were fine. So I do have two brothers.
Are they still alive?
No, my sister has died, and my one brother has died. So I have one brother in Portland. And we cherish each other because we are all that's left of the Cornell family. And no Cornells had boy children, so that name isn't going to be carried on.
Uh-huh.
So, but it was a wonderful New England family, and the Cornell family had started a meatpacking plant, which eventually became the Armour
company.
So it was a big deal, but you know, many, many years ago, and we've forgotten all about that now. So
okay. Do you remember some of the health or diseases that you might have had as a childhood, or accidents, playmates, trips, just different things about when you were young?
Okay.
Do you remember?
I lived on 4049 Southeast Ankeny.
So you that can still was, remember.
I can. Mm-hmm. We were between 39th and 41st. And right up the hill from us, there were two blocks of hills. You see, we lived on Ankeny, and the next street up was Ash, and then the next street up was something else. But we would climb up these two big hills, and whatever the season, we would skate down, bike down, sled down, or whatever. And so it was a wonderful neighborhood just to play in.
Oh, I'll bet.
You know, being a kid in those days was a lot easier than it is now.
Yes, and there wasn't quite the population then either.
No.
That there is now.
Really, and you could do simple things, and nobody would think that you should be achieving more at the moment, you know. So I had lots of skinned knees, and my mother was the neighborhood nurse. Anybody who got a skinned knee came to my mother, and she put a bandage on it, and so we did fine.
Oh, great.
About that time, you know, during the time that you sled and skate and all that, a dog bit me.
Oh.
And so here were two big fangs like this into my leg, and she just poured iodine in there and put a bandage on.
That felt wonderful.
Oh, it did. But we didn't even have methylate at that time.
Oh,
you know, this
yeah.
is the early days. because I am 84 years old now, and I don't feel it, but I...
You don't look it either.
You know, so when you get back there to those times, why, you have to remember that a lot of time has passed and things are different. Laurelhurst Park was just a block away, so in the winter we ice skated on the Laurelhurst Park pond,
uh-huh.
And it was just a great neighborhood to live in.
Oh, that's good.
And now, you know, it's such a scary thing to go to parks and things in Portland, because you're sure somebody's going to jump out of the bushes at you. So
just makes Le Grand look wonderful, doesn't it?
It does.
It really does.
I've always been an outdoor person. I did skiing before there was a Timberline and Lodge, you know. We would go and just hike our way up to the Timberline and come down, because there were no lifts or anything. And
that's probably why you're so healthy now, Gertrude.
It probably is. I did have a mastoidectomy when I was 7 years old. Had to stay in the hospital 2 weeks. But there were no antibiotics at that time. So, you know, that's about the only thing besides tonsillitis that I ever had. My sister had scarlet fever, and they made her go someplace else to have it. So none of the rest of the family got it. So I have been lucky, and I have been healthy, and I figure that good habits and plenty of exercise.
Good luck, too.
Good luck, too, yes, you bet.
Do you remember visits to your grandparents?
Yes, because my grandmother, the parents on my father's side died very early. He was 14 and 16 when his parents died. So he kind of struggled on his own. He went to Pennsylvania University and graduated, and then went into the plumbing business and came out with a plumbing company to the West. But, what was the question?
Visits to the grandparents.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So I didn't get to visit them. But my mother's parents lived out on 102nd and Gleason, and I just thought we were going way out into the farmland, which it really was, too, because there weren't too many houses around. And she taught me how to make bread.
Oh, yes.
And she even taught me how to cook. Well, my sister wasn't very domestically inclined, so I did a lot of cooking.
Did she have a wood stove?
She had a wood stove, and she had an electric stove, and she also had one of those fireless cookers. Have you ever seen a fireless cooker?
No.
Well, they are very interesting because they're a big box, and there's three or four holes in, and there's a big chunk of ceramic or something that goes in the bottom. So you heat this circle of ceramic on the stove, on the wood stove,
uh-huh.
And then you put it in the bottom there. Then you put this pan that fits right in there with your food, and you can cook a whole meal in these four pans.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and if I haven't thrown it away, I still have it up in the barn.
Oh my gosh!
Fireless cooker.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it was an interesting way to cook, and you know, talk about slow cooking. In your crock pot.
Pretty wonderful, really, because you can cook so much in it.
Yeah, and not have any electricity going or anything, you know. You just had those heated ceramic things. And but, you know, with progress, why that disappeared.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, was there religion in your home?
Yes, there was a Presbyterian church up Ankeny Street about five blocks, and it was called Central Presbyterian. We did all of our kids there. I got a wonderful education, Christian education, because the people insisted that we go visit the black churches and that the black churches come and visit us.
Good.
That was a pretty big idea in those days. So it was fun. We learned a lot.
Oh, I'll bet you did.
Yeah.
Okay. Your school days were, of course, in Portland.
I went to Laurelhurst grade school and can still remember the teachers I had. They were so outstanding. The gym teacher was especially good. You know, being athletic, I would remember the gym teacher. But one of my favorite teachers was called Sue Berg. And I corresponded with her many years after I left the, you know, even after I'd gone to college, I would write to her and tell her how much I appreciated my foundation. Then I went to Washington High School because Burnside, which is just one block away from Ankeny, was the dividing line between Grant and Washington.
Oh, yeah.
But before they decided on that, my sister had started going to Grant. So she went to Grant High School and I went to Washington High School.
I'll be darned.
And so we were rivals all the time. I just thought high school was a wonderful time of my life.
So special activities probably would have been your athletic?
Well, yes, but, you know, women were not accepted in athletics at that time. But they had dances at noon.
At noon?
Yes.
Oh, what fun.
And there was a small campus. Washington High School was right down on a city street, and there wasn't a whole lot to do, and you couldn't go far enough away to go home for lunch or anything, so you just stayed there. So they had these dances to keep people on the campus.
That was smart.
Yeah. And they had all kinds of activity clubs. Like, I was in the drama club. It was called Mask.
Uh-huh.
It was a terrific... and then there were other clubs, you know, home ec clubs, cooking clubs, I don't know what all, but that's the one that I went to.
So did you get to be the star sometimes?
No. I was too chubby to be the star.
My, you'd never know it. And I was just the opposite when I was little. I was too skinny.
Oh, my gosh.
So, things do change.
Yes.
Can you think of some humorous situations?
Oh, see, I had this older sister, and she was blonde and thin and beautiful. And so she always had more boyfriends than she knew what to do with, so she'd ask me to sit and talk with one while she went out with the other. And I always thought that was a kick.
I'll bet.
Somewhere along the line, while we were still in high school, we had to move out to 102nd and Gleason because my grandmother died.
Uh-huh.
And we moved out there to stay with him. A lot of things happened out there, like picking blackberries to sell to Safeway so that I could have a pair of English riding boots.
Mm-hmm.
We had chickens. We had a drying yard. We had a hothouse. And it was just a wonderful piece of property. We loved it. And my father could really express himself by painting in wonderful colors, which, you know, they weren't exactly doing in the
30s. You mean? Art painting?
No, like the railing going upstairs.
Oh,
and he painted that railing three different colors, yellow, orange, and black.
Uh-huh.
And it was so neat,
uh-huh.
You know. But, and I loved living in my grandmother's house. It just had a wonderful smell to it.
Well, of course, you can still remember making bread there.
Yeah, but my father was the city treasurer, Portland city treasurer. And when the Depression got really bad, they decided that all the people who worked for the city should live in the city.
Uh-huh.
So we had to give up that wonderful house and go back to the house on Ankeny because we had just rented it out to other people. So we were back in the city limits.
Oh.
Now, of course, the city limits is way out to 365 or something. But
so did they have to sell the grandmother's house?
Yes, they sold it.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, I went back and visited the people who lived there.
Oh.
They were just as proud of the house as we were. And the first time I went back, the woman said, "I'm only the second person who's lived in this house, the second owner."
That is wonderful.
Yeah, she felt very proud of it. But right now, it has been completely taken down, and there's a medical clinic on that corner.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
And we had landscaped that whole acre with trees in the summer house and everything. You know, it was just a wonderful place. It is.
You know?
So my sister and I, the last time we went by, said, "We'll never come out here and look at it again." So.
No, it just makes you feel real bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Courtship and marriage. How did you meet your husband?
Well, I was working at Berg's at the time. Charles F. Berg was a woman's apparel shop, and I was working there. And my cousin, who was a doctor, used to come in and buy clothes for his wife. And so one day he came in, he said, somebody is coming into town that I want you to meet. And I'd been after him, you know, to get me a husband because he was a doctor. And I thought, gee, this would be great, you know. So he said, someone is coming into town and I've invited him to dinner and I want to invite you to dinner. So come up to dinner at such and such a time on the 22nd of June, uh-huh. if this was. So I went up and it was Wes Brownton who was there. And we met on the 22nd of June.
What year?
1940. And by the 15th of September, we were married. So it was something that was meant to happen and happened fast. So he just happened to have left his law practice here in La Grande and gone to Salem to work at a state job just to get a little different perspective on life.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as we got married and he decided he wanted to get back to La Grande and establish a residence and one thing another. So when we did get back, the war was getting a little bit worse.
About what year
this
did you come back?
The same year, 1940.
Oh, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And so he was a reserve officer, and so we knew that it was inevitable. But we looked around and spent that first year, because we weren't called up until the fall of 41, and bought this piece of property. Yes.
Uh-huh.
So we had it to think about all the time we were gone, and there was a great big house here, and a milk house, and a shop, and a big barn. And we talked about plans and house plans and everything.
So you went with him then when he went into service?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And everything we owned, we put in a little roadster. So 5 years later when we came back...
Okay, now where were you when you were in the service?
Well, we were stationed up at Payne Field in Everett, Washington. And he went to several schools, and I'd go home to Portland, and our oldest child was born in Everett.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to school. Judge Advocate General School in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He went there during the summer, which is no time to be in Ann Arbor, Michigan, because it's hot as Hades there. A general command school in Washington, D.C., where he went, and I did go with him that time. Some other thing. But then he ended up as a captain in the Judge Advocate General's department.
Oh, my.
Which is the judicial, you know, the lawyer side of it. And he eventually got promoted to lieutenant colonel. And because he was over age, he had to retire when he got to the right age. But there was no more, like his brother became a general, there was no chance of him being a general because he had to stop.
Well,
the army.
He probably didn't mind, did he?
No, he didn't.
No, I'd be probably glad.
So we came home and started building our house here in 1950. And by that time we had two children. Carol is the oldest and Sally is the next. And we remodeled a little house that was up by the second barn that we bought.
Which we rented.
Which you rented, yes.
Yeah.
That's right. You remember that, don't
yeah.
you? Alice Miller sold us that barn and that little house, and so we remodeled that and lived in it for 5 years. And then we had it for a rental all those years.
Oh, I know. Danny was 3 months old in that house.
Isn't that amazing,
yeah.
though? Wow.
We were pretty new, too.
Yes. Isn't it fun to look back on those times, because life was so simple in those days.
Oh. When you stop and think of what we lived on in those days and managed.
Yes.
You know?
I laugh because once in a while, Wes's habit was making out a budget for every month. And he started right at the beginning of our marriage. And some months there was more down for gasoline for the car than there was for groceries. Because groceries were cheap, you know.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. So some of the funny things were that we were so involved with each other that we would forget that the gas tank had to be filled once in a while, and we would run out of gas. Oh, it was such a funny thing. And I'd say, "What's the matter with you, Wes?" And he'd say, "What's the matter with you, Gerda?"
You know what? If you paid any attention.
No.
Not like some cars nowadays where they sit there and blink at you that you're not out of gas.
Oh, that's right. That is a help these days.
Oh, I know it. Well, let's see.
Lengthy, huh?
No, too deep in things, I think. Okay, your vocation, did you work or did you mostly raise your kids?
I just mostly raised my kids. I'm a great advocate of education. So after the girls had graduated from college, I went back to college and got a teaching degree.
Well, you did, didn't you?
I did. But there was not a shortage, an excess of teachers at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like it would be crazy for me to get a job, because by that time I had Mark and Cindy,
mm-hmm.
and so I might as well stay home and take care of them. I did a little substituting. Both of our mothers needed attention and transportation.
Yes,
and because my mother lived here and his mother, of course, had lived here. They came in 1912, Wes and his mother, so and dad and brother and sister.
Uh-huh.
They came from Canyon City. And, of course, in those days, well, even when we bought this piece of property, every street around here was graveled.
Yes, definitely.
Uh-huh. And I was just trying to think of how things were way back then. But every advancement that we make, you forget how primitive we were the time before, you know?
Yes, definitely. I got the emails, you know, and they were telling the price of things then and now. And it was just, you just forget. And then you forget how, there were so few people and there were so few cars.
That's true.
And this was in the 1910, 15s or whatever, I can't remember which.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing how few people drove.
That's true.
There wasn't that many paved roads or anything.
I know.
And you just don't think about it.
Uh-huh. Oh, dear.
Okay, so how long were you in? Did you end up taking care of parents? Did they live with you? Or?
No. Grandmother, my mother lived in the little house next door, and she china painted, so she was perfectly happy in her little nest up there.
Yeah, I think she was there when we lived there, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
she was.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so we would eat meals together a lot, but not necessarily every single meal. She smoked and we didn't, so the rest of my family all smoked, and they thought it was the strangest thing that I would tell my mother she couldn't smoke in my house.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it was a bone of
smell.
Yeah, it was a bone of contention to them, but it wasn't to us and it wasn't to her. She was perfectly willing to confine her smoking to her own little house, so that was good.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Grandmother Broughton, the last year or so, had somebody stay with her, but she didn't want to leave her house. And I know the feeling now.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave my house either.
I know.
It's hard to think about.
And the yard gets a little harder, but of course, I love yard work, and I'm sure you love
it. I do, too. As long as I can do it, I do it. But I do have help now.
Oh, yes. I hire kids to come and help me weed and mm-hmm. and do some of the things like that.
If you can catch up with one,
yes.
That's good.
You get one that will work.
Yeah.
So when did Wes become judge?
Well, it was 1947.
Uh-huh.
And, no, that isn't it. He was 48 years old when he ran for judge, and it was 1957, because he was elected the year that Cindy was born, which was 1956. And then he was sworn in January of 57. So,
now, see, I was thinking that he was judge when we lived up here, but evidently not, because we got married in 53, so...
Mm-hmm.
It must have been
earlier
about 54
uh-huh.
when, no, it would have been 53 when we lived here, because Danny was only 3 or 4 months old.
Ah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
But your husband had such a marvelous reputation as being a good judge.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well, he did. He, people still tell me that, you know, we probably wouldn't want to print what they say about the other judges, but...
or some of the other lawyers. Yeah. So how many years was he judge?
He was judge for 18 years.
Uh-huh.
And then he did senior judging for about 10 years after that. And
what does that mean?
Well, there's a segment in the state judgeship that once you retire, if you still want to stay active, why they put you on this list. And then if they need a judge someplace, why they just send for you.
Oh,
and
that was interesting.
Yeah, so he got to judge in Roseburg and Klamath Falls and various places, especially Multnomah.
And did you get to go with travel with him?
Once in a while I did.
Uh-huh.
You know, it seems like there was always something that kept me busy, and... we just didn't go away and leave the properties because we had horses and animals, other animals and people to care for. So you just don't go off.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you have always been busy in the community. Talk about some of your civic position and political activities and positions held.
You know, one thing about being a judge is that you sign a statement that you will not be partisan. You are nonpartisan. So that meant that as far as I was concerned, I'd better not define myself as either a Republican or a Democrat.
Oh.
So
yeah.
If anything came up, why we could not stand up for whatever we believed, you know, as far as political was concerned, which is a good thing with a judge. A judge should be nonpartisan so that you can look at both sides equally.
Sure.
And I kind of forgot that I was supposed to be one way or the other. And
oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
That'd be very difficult.
And you never could give a contribution to anything that had any political aspects to it.
Uh-huh.
So it just made for a different kind of a life than you would normally do. So I wasn't active in political women's things. But I have always been interested in great decisions from the very, very beginning.
Uh-huh.
I would go to this little study group. We started meeting in the library conference room downstairs, and then it got to be a little bit bigger, and we had meetings in homes and in churches, because there were a lot of people interested after World War II concerning the state of the world, you know. And that's what we do in Great Decisions, is talk about world affairs.
Uh-huh.
So we kept up with that, and we ordered the books through the Extension Service.
Uh-huh.
And then just recently, they've turned that over to the World Affairs Council, and we get our booklets from the World Affairs Council.
Goodness.
And we have about 25 people who meet every other week and talk about foreign affairs.
Oh, how interesting.
And this has been going on for 55 years.
Oh, my gosh.
It's really kind of an amazing thing.
I suppose some of those people you've known a long, long time.
I have.
Yes.
Mary Jo Thomerson is one that's been in it as long as I have. But since then, Camille Hawkins,
yes,
who kind of represents AAUW, you know,
yes,
she is the head of the group now, and she gets resource speakers for us and everything. So it's a wonderful activity, and it keeps me up on what's going on.
What are you talking about as far as the war goes here lately?
Well, today we were talking about multilateralism and unilateralism and internationalism and isolationism.
Oh, my.
And that all leads you to the United Nations. And so whether you believe in the United Nations or not, and, you know, every good thing that comes up, you have a lot of protagonists. So we were talking about so many angles, because the United Nations represents multiple things that you're interested in, like environment and children and human rights, and besides what you do as far as protecting nations are concerned, you know. So it's a pretty big deal. We spend an hour and a half just talking about this one thing, whether we should be multilateral or unilateral.
Oh, I bet.
And it was extremely interesting.
How do most of them feel about us going to war with Iran? Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things that they were, most of them felt?
Well, actually, we were not talking about the war.
Okay.
We were talking about other aspects.
True.
Of world problems and whether we should try harder to cooperate with the other countries.
Uh-huh.
And why we don't, you know, and so.
Oh, I don't know. I just don't know what to think sometimes, whether Bush is just anxious for war. I myself don't know. We won't get into that.
Okay.
Now, I know you've belonged to different clubs.
Yes.
So.
You, way back in the early days, there was an organization called YWEA. It was called Young Women's Educational Association.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Broughton had something to do with forming that group. This was long before television or even radio.
Uh-huh.
And they'd get together at the church, and they'd put on a play, a meaningful play, and have a meeting and maybe have refreshments. And once in a while, they'd put on a big dinner. But there was a big stage down at the Methodist Church, and women from all over joined this organization. And it was a wonderful organization. It allowed people to use their talents, and Ruby Skeen was very involved in that. And so that was the organization that I belonged to early on. And the Neighborhood Club, it also was a separate organization. Eventually, they went together, those two organizations, and then they disappeared. But they served their purpose, you know, because you know how life changed once television came in, or even radios. So then, of course, as you heard, I started out as a Presbyterian, and I became a Methodist because all the Broughtons were Methodists, and it seemed reasonable for one person to go to the Methodist church, then the rest of the family to change to Presbyterian. So I liked the Methodist church anyway, and there's not a whole lot of difference in them. But.
Is that the one that's on the corner of
Spring,
yes,
and Fourth?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so it's a good old church. But, you know, you involve your children in Sunday school, and as a kid, Wes did everything there was to do in that church. And the other day, somebody had a picture in their hand, and I said, "What is that a picture of?" And he said, "A Tom Thumb wedding." And I said, "I haven't heard that for a long time, but when they needed a money-making thing, they would put on a Tom Thumb wedding."
Really?
And that would be the little people would be the bride and groom, and Wes participated in that. And
you mean
and
the children
Sheldon
would pretend to
yeah.
be riding groom?
Yeah, they
oh
would.
Oh, my.
And people would come and pay money to see them, you know.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Let's see. The churches. We're talking about churches. So, this Tom Thumb wedding, this lady had a picture of it from the church, the Methodist Church in Union. They had done the same thing, probably, for a moneymaker, and in those days they were far enough away that you wouldn't go to each other's, you know. And I just thought that was the most interesting thing, and she was trying to get some pictures copied and blown up of that event. I wish that we had some pictures of the Tom Thumb wedding that Sheldon and Wes were in. It would have been so interesting.
Well, of course.
But
his parents didn't have any of them.
I guess not. Well, you know, even cameras weren't.
I know.
They
didn't take very many pictures in those days.
Yeah, you had to have somebody from outside come in and take.
That's right.
A professional. So that was fun. But there were all kinds of wonderful, different kinds of money-making things in those days that were legitimate for churches.
Oh,
and
yes, bazaars and and bingo and all kinds of things.
All kinds of things.
And baked foods. And
right.
So, well, what other clubs have you belonged to?
See, when I came back from being in the Army with Wes, I joined a group called Junior Art Research. And some of my best friends were in this group, and we studied art for almost 50 years, 40 years at least. And then things changed for everybody, and we weren't able to meet as regularly, but we met twice a month. Somebody had a complete program on some artist, and we used a outline from George Nightingale, and actually Marion Nightingale was in the group too, and we studied art from caveman to modern art, you know. We learned so much about art, and now we really enjoy going to museums and know what we're looking at.
I bet.
Geneva Tuttle is one of them, and she has a chance to go down to the big Impressionist exhibit at the Art Museum down here, that's in Portland right now.
Yes.
Oh, she's thrilled to pieces, and I said, no, I wish I could go with you. But, you know, it's just really an amazing thing. So, let's see, besides that, I belong to PEO, which is a educational organization for, we promote education for women.
Uh-huh.
And then,
that's not the teacher's one,
no,
is it? No,
no.
Okay.
And then I belong to AUW, which is, if you are a college graduate, you can belong to AUW. It's the American Association of University Women. Mm-hmm. And I joined that and stuck with it for about 20 years. But when Wes got sick and needed more attention, it was one thing that I could drop. However, this Great Decisions group was one I didn't want to, and the AUW has kind of taken it over, so I'm kind of related to AUW without having to be a member.
Wow, nice.
Yes, that is nice. And let's see, as far as a little social club was concerned, a group of people who wanted to know each other better formed a little group of all kinds of different people called Sunshine Girls.
Oh.
And we just had a great time. We met once a month and for a Saturday lunch and discussed everything there was to discuss.
Sounds like what they got going now called the Red Hatters.
Oh, sounds like it. Yeah,
yes.
That's right. And so then once a year we'd have a Christmas party or something and the men could belong. And now, you know, almost everybody, including the women, are gone, which is just really kind of an amazing thing because it just seemed like we would never end, you know, but
know.
We ended.
I know. When did you join the hospital auxiliary?
Well, I joined that way back when St. Joseph was going.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I've been a volunteer for hospitals for a long time. And then when St. Joseph closed, why, we just melded into the Grand Round. And so I was president of it for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
So you're one of the oldest members, yeah, then, aren't you? Pink Ladies.
Yeah, yeah. I would think so.
Yeah.
I know Irene Broughton, Sheldon's wife,
uh-huh,
had joined at the Catholic Church too, at the Catholic Hospital too. So that was interesting, but I think she'd belonged a few years more than I did. She didn't have any children to raise. So
makes a big difference.
It does make a big difference.
Let's see, when did Wes get sick?
He really was in very good health up until he had a heart attack about 6 years ago. So, and he bounced back from that. But after a couple of years, he got pneumonia. Pneumonia takes an awful lot out of you.
Yes.
He bounced back from that. And then his brother died. And then, 2 years ago, it was pneumonia that killed him. Because it was a sudden kind that just cut off his oxygen supply.
Oh my.
And even though we got him to the hospital, the rest of his body was closing down. So
how many years did you get to have enjoy each other?
We were married for 60 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And you know, he was 32 when we got married, so we didn't ever expect to even get to 50, let alone 60.
Well, was he almost 90?
He was 92 and a half when he died.
Oh,
isn't that amazing?
You're so blessed.
Oh, I know it.
I only had 45 years with Elton.
I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, that so often happens.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty hard with Elton, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, Elton had such a rare disease called progressive supranuclear palsy.
Oh, yeah.
And it just slowly paralyzes you.
Oh, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
It was really, really bad.
It was...
Well, Wes was really in pretty good health. He could get around. We played cards the night before he died.
Uh-huh.
So.
What kind of cards do you play?
Oh, just a simple little game like King's Corners.
I play Pinochle. Okay. Have hobbies? Things that you do, I mean, make or...
I'm not much of a craft person, but if somebody shows me how to do something, I can do it. I did sew for the children when they were little. I took lessons from Bernice Brown.
Uh-huh.
But what I enjoyed doing most was riding horseback. And
uh-huh,
I rode a lot with, about the first person I met coming to Le Grand, other than my in-laws, was Jean Burney. And she was my mentor for the rest of her life.
Oh.
Because she was such a fabulous person.
Uh-huh.
She had a string of horses, and she was very generous with them.
Oh,
and
nice.
Every week that the weather was good, we went out on a ride up in the hills and cooked our lunch out. And there was a group of about 10 people who did that. Some people had their own horses, and some people rode her horses. It was a most wonderful time of my life. And, we often went on Thursday, so I called it Maid's Day. It was the Maid's Day off, so I left and got a babysitter to take care of the kids. And, and that went on for a long time. And it was, Jean Burney was a very intelligent person. She had taught piano lessons to both Sheldon and Wes.
Uh-huh.
But she'd always been an outdoor person. Her mother said she got married on horseback and stayed on horseback the rest of her life.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Oh, that's about like Gertie Hibbert. My gosh, you know, she just celebrated her 90th birthday the other day, and she still goes out there and gets on the tractor and does stuff on her ranch.
I saw those pictures, and I was really impressed.
Oh, she...
Have you interviewed her
uh-huh,
yet? Oh, that's
yes.
good.
I tell you, she's a going girl.
Oh,
she's more like a tomboy in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just farmed the place for I don't know how long.
Oh, that's good.
So let's see. Let me stop for a little bit.
It's almost full on. No, no, there's the
there
light.
There go. It's
there's,
going.
There's the light. Okay.
Okay.
Before Wes became judge a few years, a paint store became available to have an investment in, and so we decided that we would buy it. And this was a store that Mrs. Bradley, Nora Bradley, had already been working in.
Uh-huh.
And so we just kept her working there because she was a great person. We decided to keep the paint store, initiate a framing department.
Where was this located?
And it was right down on Main, on Adams Avenue,
uh-huh.
Approximately where the, anyways, down from the coffee shop, about in the middle of that block between Elm and Fir.
Uh-huh.
Fitzgerald's had a florist in there. There was a bakery in there, and then Cherry's Florist was on the corner.
Yes.
And then this paint store was there. It's called Le Grand Paint and Glass. No, Town and Country Paint and Glass Store. And so then we initiated a gift shop in there, and he and I had a lot of fun going to the markets and buying for it. And that was a lot of fun. But when he became judge, he couldn't give it his attention. And that was the year that Cindy was born, so I couldn't give it my attention. So we just sold it to Rhodes Lewis, as a matter of fact. And he was the music teacher at the college at the time. And so he sold musical instruments from there.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that?
Yes, yes.
And then it burned down, and he moved over to where McGlasson's used to be, next to the drugstore on that corner.
Yes.
You know, Jack's drugstore, Jack Ernest, Jack
uh-huh,
Ernest
uh-huh.
drugstore. So things have changed a lot downtown.
Oh, my.
And
do you remember the Chinese noodle parlor?
Oh, yes.
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 Yeah.
We went up to that many times. I thought that was such a treat.
We did, too.
And then, of course, I was around when the Sacagawea was knocked down.
Yes. And our sororities used to have the big balls there,
oh,
you know.
Remember that?
Oh, that was so fun.
Oh, and the dance club that used to meet there all the time, and the symphony ball was there, and,
I always thought it was tragic that the Sacagawea was torn down.
Oh, me
kinda.
Too. Yeah.
We kind of lost a historical building there.
We did. You know, the KOBM was in that building, and the nice restaurant, and...
Yeah.
I met J.F. Kennedy there and his wife, and
oh my goodness!
You know, it was just a nice place because of the KLBM being there and everything. So that was a landmark that we should never have torn down.
I agree with you.
And they had a dickens of a time getting it down because it was so well built, too.
You know, I don't think you specified the names of your children.
Okay. The first one is Carol. She was born in 1942 in Everett, Washington. Sally was born in Chicago, Oak Park, Illinois, actually, in 44. And then we were mustered out of the Army in 45 decided to work on this piece of property, and so we lived in the little house up by the barn that we had remodeled where you lived when Mark was born in 48. And so when he was 3 years old, we moved into this house. But we waited 5 years because of the war effort. Almost all the building materials had to be restocked and redone and all that. And 50 years later, this house is still standing. 53 years, still standing in pretty good shape. So I think we did a pretty good job of building this house.
Definitely.
And we did all the painting and all the finishing in here because in those days, even though carpenters only charged $2 or $3 or $4 an hour, why, We didn't have that much money either.
Well, no,
so,
we don't when we're first married.
Yeah, so we feel like this house is a lot of us in it.
Oh my, yes.
Then after we moved in and through the years, he refinished the basement, and he built this cabinet and he built that cabinet, and you know, he
did a lovely job too.
He opened up the attic, and it's just amazing what you can do if you have the skills, and he did have the skills, and he was a perfectionist. So,
and to think he was a judge, but yet could do all those things.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And so how many grandchildren did you tell me you had?
Okay. Then Cindy was born in 1956. So, Carol has a son named Eric, who is 35 tomorrow on Valentine's Day. And he has not been interested in getting married yet. He doesn't think that he is earning a good enough living, I think. You know how it is. I can't afford a wife. So,
of course, they'll never be able to afford one, but
yeah.
They have to make up their mind.
Sally opted not to have children, and Mark had gone to Vietnam and had difficulty having children, so they adopted a child at birth. And so she is just a precious granddaughter. Her name is Lisa, and she's 21 years old, and a junior in college down in California.
Wonderful.
And Mark is a hard worker, but enjoys life too. So, well, he wasn't enjoying life last night when he called me. It was pouring down rain, and he couldn't drive on I-5 because they had a big mudslide.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he was out on 54 or something, and he said, it's so slow, and I'm just decided I'd call you because I'm taking me so long to get home. So,
oh, that was nice of him to call.
Yeah. So then Cindy got married and had two children, and they are now, their name is Chad and Chelsea, and Chad's 20 and Chelsea's 18. So, they live in the little house next door.
Oh, good.
So, they're practically live with us, but, you know, I need to take better care of Cindy because of all her arthritis.
That is so hard to put up with, so miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my dear, I imagine you're just going to keep active and keep learning and keep doing things for the rest of your life.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not a very well organized person, so I have to keep reorganizing. And we just have unfortunately put a lot of stuff in the attic that I really need to go through with before I'm through with this world and, you know, eliminate.
There's the cutest book called Clutter's Last Stand.
Oh.
And it tells you that all this stuff that you've saved, your poor kids are going to have to get rid of it.
Yes.
And that we should be doing that, but it's not easy because they're all sentimental and we hang on to them.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, Gerda, I have always admired you and thought that you've done well, done lots of nice things in the community, and just pretty special people.
Well, thank you. You know, Mary Helen Garut and I decided to start the recycling program because we got interested through the Ford magazine, and she was always getting this Ford magazine, and she said, you know, we should be doing something. So all my life I had been a recycler and a gleaner because down in Portland they have all these places that you can glean peas and apples and everything else after they're harvested, you know. And so my mother and I enjoyed canning and making stuff like that.
So have I all my life.
Yeah. So it was a natural.
Do you still can?
I freeze now, but I didn't can anything this year. You know, you kind of lose your heart for it.
I canned applesauce and peaches.
That's what I would have done if I had found a good price on apples or peaches.
I know.
But I like to eat peaches fresh, too. But
of getting
anyway,
back to recycling?
We talked Fred Arnst into teaching an environmental class over at the high school, and that he could incorporate into that how to recycle.
Uh-huh.
And then the shop class built some containers so that people could put their cans at the schools. So we had containers for cans at every school, and then the city would pick them up. But before we got that far, we had several pickups right down on Washington, where the parking lot is now, mm-hmm. Behind, next to OTEC.
Yeah.
And people would bring their bottles, and we had a big truck that we smashed the bottles in. We had a big truck to put all the tin cans in.
Oh, that was nice.
And then Mary Helen and I took the truck over to Walla Walla, where they have a cannery, and I sent them off to the Midwest, where they heat them up and use them again, you know. And somebody else drove the truck to Portland, where they have a glass place. And then we finally talked the school into doing these things, of having these boxes around. And then the city would pick them up. And then the city finally took them over to Walla Walla. And they used the money to buy trees and stuff for Le Grand. And that was great, and it lasted for quite a while, you know, as long as the interest was there, and the boxes held up. But as everything, it went by the wayside. I was active in the advisory committee for the solid waste when they built that recycling place out on 82.
Yeah.
And I don't want to badmouth anybody, but they didn't build it the way it was supposed to be built, and so it wasn't successful.
Uh-huh.
But it was unfortunate that they spent that much money and didn't do it right.
Well, yes.
And but you know, in those days, which has been 30 years ago now, at least maybe 35, men did not think that women should be in positions like that, and they really didn't want to listen to
any of the ideas, huh?
No. So, even though they'd been tried and true, but we never did get to try the whole thing.
That
would have made the whole thing work, you know.
Well, I wish right now, with our recycling business, that they would have a container you could put the glass in.
Yeah.
You know, because
well,
that's the way
you
they
can
did.
Go over there and put the glass in.
Yes, but I'm too busy and I don't do it. I'm not good at recycling. Yeah, like in Vancouver, we had a bin that was for glass and metal and paper.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the way it should
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
It really should be. I can't believe that they can be getting any place with all this mixed up recycling.
Oh, I know. And just like you can't put wax cartons in there and you can't put Kleenexes in there and you just... I have one that's supposed to be recyclable, and before I know it, I'm throwing a Kleenex in it. You know?
Oh.
Then I have to go and pick them out.
Yeah.
So
I'm
not too enthused about it yet.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, dear.
Well, how are we doing
now, on that story that I gave the hospital auxiliary, I should say that I belonged to the hospital auxiliary and did a lot of volunteer work over a period of 15 years. And then... what else did I think of just then? What was it?
At the hospital, you mean?
Oh, about our trip around the world.
Oh!
You know, Wes got an invitation to go to World Peace Through Law conference, and it was the first one that they held, and it was to be held in Athens, Greece.
Uh-huh.
So my friend Jenny Clark, who was here at the time, her husband was a professor at the college, she said, "You should go. You too should go. Now get busy and make the arrangements." So,
oh, I'm glad you did. Aren't you glad you
did? Oh, yes.
What countries did you get to go to?
Well, we actually went clear around the world. We went to Hawaii and Japan and Hong Kong and Calcutta, India, and Lebanon.
Yeah.
While it was peaceful, you know, long before
the
war.
What year was it?
1963. And that's a long time ago.
Well, it was sure a better time.
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
We went to the Holy Land.
Oh.
And that was before the 67 war.
Yes.
So that it was entirely different than when people go now. You know, it's quite different because there's more Israel than there is
Palestine.
Palestine. Uh-huh. And but we certainly did get an appreciation for other cultures and other things. It was a real eye opener.
Well,
for us.
And you just find it amazing how much older some of these other places are than the United States.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the United States is that young, but it is compared to the rest
of
the world.
Is. And to think that we have to remake the wheel every time we try anything, instead of pulling on the old civilizations, you know. We did go to Egypt and down into Egypt and saw all of the wonders of the pyramids and Abu Simbel and all of those things. And then went up through Europe and came home by Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, my.
And we were in Anchorage before the earthquake up there.
Uh-huh.
Because the earthquake was 1964. Now, we can't believe that it's a big town now because it was just a little village when we were there.
I'll bet.
Yeah. But we were in Copenhagen, we were in Belgium, we were in France, England, and the only country we didn't go to was Germany. We just didn't have time to work that in.
Well, you just can't do everything,
can't
that's
do
for
everything.
Sure.
Well, and later on we took
marvelous, marvelous experience.
It was just grand. And then we took a trip to Russia in 1980 and with a Willamette professor and his wife, who was Russian, and had a wonderful time.
Oh,
and
we what time of the year did you go?
Let's see, I think it was June. In fact, it was the year that St. Helens blew up, and it blew up while we were there.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we didn't know about it till we got back, because there was no news there that we would understand that, you know, you could hear that this was happening. And when we got back on the plane, well, here was a magazine telling about St. Helens blowing up.
But you never want to go to Russia when it's cold. Those poor people just about freeze over there.
Oh, I know it.
It's so sad.
Yeah. We went from Leningrad down to Armenia. So we saw all of those different states that now have broken away from Russia, like Georgia and some of these other states, you know.
He didn't hit China.
No, Wes always wanted to go to China, but
yeah.
we didn't make it. We got to Hong Kong, but
we have in our church John and Betty Springer. Do you know them?
I do know them.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Well, they got back from India, but mm-hmm. they also got to go to China, and so they came to the sorority and they showed slides, about an hour and a half on India.
Oh,
and
wonderful!
And it was just fascinating. We
I
all
love
enjoyed
India.
It. Mm-hmm. And so now they're going to come March 26th, we're going to do it out of Diamond City with the other sorority and tell us about China.
Oh, my.
So
that'd
we're looking
wonderful.
Forward to that.
So they took pictures and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Did a real good job.
Oh, that's one place he wanted to go, and Australia.